true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Recording in progress. I've now started my recording too.
We are so recording.
Well, I just hired another person to help us do staging stuff.
Okay.
He's the guy.
Where'd you find this human?
He's a guy who I put a thing on a couple theater pages on Facebook saying like, actor, want some side hustle work? And he's an actor, musical theater. He's doing something at Berklee Playhouse right now. He was in New York 10 years. He's a man who lives with his husband in the Oakland Hills, and he's done a ton of coaching work with executive companies, and he's becoming a therapist.
Okay.
So we had like a million things to talk about. He will hit it right off with you and Dylan and everybody else. He was just like built. He's like perfect. He fits right in.
Great.
It was great. Yeah. Crazy. So yeah, that was fun. You and I finished staging a house today. This very morning.
I hate stairs.
Stairs are killing you. You're going to die tomorrow from them.
Yeah.
What's happening with your body now?
My body's okay today. I took it more easy on the stairs, but I was telling you already, but I'll tell the listeners. I had literally like scary experience because of my body suddenly failing. Like I've sneezed or moved a pillow and thrown my back out. I've done that.
Totes.
We've all done that weird thing where you fart bad and then your back is gone.
Yeah.
Or something. But this one was so like aggressively sudden and out of nowhere. It felt like I'd been shot by a laser from a distance because I was just walking down the stairs. This is after going up and down these very steep stairs at this house we were doing and a bunch of times. And I was just coming down the stairs. And
just
suddenly,
to be clear, because the details are getting a little for the listener.
Right.
We were staging a house, and in the staging house, the stairs up to the house, there were two sets of stairs into the first level, into the second level. Very steep, like too steep.
Like, and I probably wouldn't pass accreditation or whatever today if they were being built, you know?
Right. And then now Cassidy's saying, like, when he went
At my home, I also have a flight of stairs from my bedroom to the downstairs, and I was going downstairs just to go to the kitchen or something. And it was like someone had shot me with a no-leg laser. Like, suddenly my left leg just went, whoop, just buckled under me.
Just stopped working.
With an electric shock. And I was like, what?
Did it hurt?
It hurt, but more like, what the? It was more fail than pain.
Yeah, that's not, like, was it the kind of thing where, I've had it happen where all of a sudden you just have no power in your leg. You have no, like, it doesn't stand up anymore. It just goes, nope, I'm a noodle.
I'm a noodle, but it wasn't like it was asleep. So there was like a shot of something like
weird
pain and electricity.
Wow.
Like it felt like I'd been shocked.
Yeah, and then, see, I think you had a nerve thing happen.
Yeah, that's what it makes sense. And then I was walking through the living room, like with my heart already pounding out of fear. And then it happened again. And then I just was like, okay, stop. And I just went to the ground and stretched a whole bunch and like turned things and relaxed. And then I lay down on an ice pack for a while and it's fine today. Went back to that steep house place, went up and down the stairs a few more times, but a little more consciously, like using the rails and not just running up and down.
Yeah.
But I'm old now.
Yeah. It seems to be happening to the best of us.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very weird. Very weird.
What does any of it mean?
It's all going to end pretty soon. So I'm in a real place. I mean, we're going to die.
Oh,
we're gonna
like
die
soon, or like soon in the relative geological sense.
Well, like think about how fast the last 5 years of your life have gone by.
Okay, so let's say I've got 35 more to go.
Right now, each five
get me to 90.
Each 5 years is going to be faster than the last. That's how it goes.
Okay,
you've heard this from old people, right?
Mm.
No.
No.
Old people say if you ask your parents tonight.
Mm-hmm.
How fast does a year fly by now? They'll be like, oh, it's like a week. I don't understand it because you're moving so slowly. Like for me, I just move slower and slower every day. And time is just like zip, zip, zippity pow.
I don't know. Yeah.
So anyway.
Yeah.
Since we're going to die.
I'm afraid of decay. I'm not afraid of
same
death.
100%. I'm afraid of like the pain of a hospital. I don't want their drugs. I don't want their interventions. I don't want their surgeries. I don't want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what I was going to say is that, you know, with the whole like, there's not like, I don't know. My response to it is very like, let's enjoy. Let's have a good damn time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's done soon. It's like done. Like for donezo done.
Yeah.
So like, let's have a good damn time.
Yeah.
I think I'm extra that way though, because I've spent my life healing and just trying to get to okay. And then finding that I sort of surpass okay and get into like, wait, this is actually kind of good. I think I'd like to enjoy it now. Like it's been work the whole time. A lot of work for me. Now I'm like, also I went from Aries South Node to Libra North Node, which is like Aries is like,
well,
independence, action, do it on your own, by yourself, make it happen, aggression, active, masculine, da da da. And then the first part of my life. Your South Node speaks to like what you come into your body with and what the first half of your life is. And then the North Node is what's the second half of your life like? What are you heading towards? And that's for me is Libra, which is beauty, arts, connection, community, friends, togetherness, love. And I'm like, man, that's where I'm at.
Mm.
That's what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Not like achievement and I don't know, just like, I just want to be with good people and see pretty stuff.
Yeah. I was doing a voiceover workshop last night with my agent, and this was the text that we worked with, one of them. It's just because it's weirdly relevant.
Yeah.
Here, I'm going to lean in.
Oh, wait, hold on. Ladies of America who get their panties wet by Cassidy's voice, apparently, because we now have a following of wet women.
Maybe not ladies just, all. There might be some others.
Fair enough. All humans of Earth who are moistened by Cassidy's voice, it's about to happen.
By my moistening voice.
Prepare yourself.
Remember when they said you have your whole life ahead of you? At United Healthcare, we say you still do. It's nice to know you're free to focus on what matters with reliable Medicare coverage from United Healthcare.
Oh, great job. Fucking one take wonder. Yes.
But that was exactly what we were talking about. Remember when they said you had your whole life ahead of you? Well, I mean, it's funny because it's actually a tautology. You still have your whole life ahead of you.
Right. It's just the less amount of time. Yeah. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't miss, oh man, I have a weird life. I don't miss the whole, like, Eric was saying that the other day. He was like, you know, we were talking about some young person we both were cranky about. I was like, fucking young people, am I right? And he was like, yeah. He's like, the only thing, and I think I said, like, I don't miss that time. I do not miss my 20s at all. And he was like, well, I miss the feeling of, like, infinite possibility lays before me. Everything's possible. I could do whatever. And also my 20-year-old body. And I'm like, interesting. I don't miss the feeling of everything's possible. Cause to me, it was like overwhelming. And I like was running so hard at it. I'm like enjoying more so the I'm good. There's like 8 things possible. And that's plenty. I don't even how about let's take it down to 2. I'm good with 2 things possible. And I'm good with them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and to be very honest, like the healing path has definitely done a thing where it's like, I don't actually think I believed that when I was in my 20s, that anything's possible.
Mm.
I think you had all these possibilities in front of you. And they, like you said, they're kind of overwhelming. There's too many. I don't fucking know. So I actually didn't believe in any of it. I just was like, well, I'll just kind of go and do. And now I'm gradually learning, you know, like unlearning limiting beliefs, you know, and stuff like that, where it's like,
right.
So I'd say as I age, even though nothing's really that different, but I actually believe in more possibility than I did when I was in my 20s.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. My life is weird.
Yeah.
It's like backwards. I guess that's not that weird. It's not that weird. I think we all just have our own trips we're on, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's on their own fucking trip. My trip has to do with like the freedom of being liberated from having to do so many things so hard and so intensely.
Word.
It just feels liberating as fuck. I do not want to be a young person again. Not this young person, anyway.
I don't want to be a young person right now, especially. That's worse.
That too.
Worse than ever.
Yeah. 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 I think I had it also for me, I had an addiction to infinite possibility. Like I was all about, there was so much. I was like, everything's possible. We're going to do it all. We're going here. We're going there. We're going to achieve everything. And there was like this, like some kind of rat racy thing about it for me. And now there's like a, sure, you could do lots of things, but I'm actually just interested in like, what's correct?
Yeah.
What do I have energy for? What feels correct? Like what lines up organically when I take a step towards it? What works? What's elegant? Like I'm interested in like the machine of my life moving elegantly. You put your foot here and the pedal goes and then you move. Not this, like I did so much like pickaxing my way through things that were not feeling good.
Yeah.
I want things that are, that feel like I'm flowing down the river as opposed to like fucking chipping away at the mountain of whatever. I just don't want that. But like, again, that's just particular to me. Aries to Libra is, that's what that is. That's not for everyone. That's not like the right way to be or a spiritual truth. It's just like what's happening for me and my trajectory. Like I have a friend who we talk all the time about. Hers is the opposite. She's Libra to Aries. And she's getting all kinds of like in her second half. She's like, wait a minute. I have power and I can do things and I'm active and I do it on my own. And she's like, tell me how you did that thing. And I'm like, oh God, it sounds so exhausting. She's like, I know, but I want to do it and I have the energy for it. And I'm like, okay, here you go.
Now I'm ready.
It's cool. Right? This reminds me of something Rami and I were talking about this week that I feel like would be great to talk a little bit about with our listeners here present, which is like, we were talking about the specific, I'm going to use this specific phenomenon as a doorway into talking about more about this idea of like how human design says we are so locked into our point of view that even when we think we're seeing beyond it, we're so not. Like we're always like looking at every experience through our lens, our own lenses, and it's really hard to see another way. Because you so just like are what you are.
Yeah.
And your experiences have been what they've been. Anyway, we were talking about, there's so many things in this conversation, but Rami being a unique being who some parts of Rami's family are white Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And some parts are black Haitians.
Uh-huh.
Right? So Rami is of mixed race in the way that, I guess, like, isn't that kind of a misnomer, that term?
Yeah, I mean, it's applied to like
people who are brown.
Very broad. If your categories are very separated, then when they mix, I mean, everybody's mixed race in a sense, but like
that's what I mean.
But if you go like black, yeah. White, Asian, yeah. Black, like right. You have two very clear branches on the checkbox on the form that you fill out, you know?
Right. Totally. Yes. Yeah, the census form or whatever the fuck.
That's the word I was looking for.
Okay. So anyway, with Rami's particular mixed race experience and lens, I came to them saying, I would like to hear, if you're open to sharing, your perspective on this phenomenon I've noticed many times. And before I name it, I would like to state formally, I said to Rami, I am not asking this question because I think my white lady way of being is better than the black lady thing I'm about to describe.
Yeah.
I'm asking it because I would actually like a better understanding of this black lady phenomenon I have experienced many times. Would you be willing to like, what do you got?
Yeah.
And it was the phenomenon of that, you know, I grew up in Miami, very dynamic, very mixed race, mixed ethnicity,
yeah.
Place, right? Like everyone I grew up with was Cuban or Jewish or black or Venezuelan it was just very diverse. A black lady phenomenon I ran into actually while you and I were staging yesterday when I went to pee at Home Depot is I went into the bathroom and there was a woman in the next stall on the phone with a friend of hers, a black woman.
Uh-huh.
And she must have spoken she was speaking at decibels of volume about the most private shit. She was talking about her kids' health and her things her husband said to her and like what was happening in her poop. She was just narrating loudly her experience, first to a friend on the phone, then the phone call ended. Then she was yelling to, not yelling, but like speaking very loudly to a friend outside the bathroom who was speaking back to her at full volume, both black women being like, yeah, I'm running out of toilet paper. I got you, girl. I'll come get some. I'm going to get this pee all up on my legs. You know, like full volume pee talk, public restroom, fearless. So I was just like, I really want to understand this better because coming from, my God, the Protestant whiteness of my mother's side of my family. I mean, everything has always been about appropriateness and your volume is low and you're thinking of others. And you don't go too loud because it's not, we don't want to make them uncomfortable with our pee talk, you know, or whatever it was.
Uh-huh.
And then I had all these years of rebelling against that and being like, I'm the loud Jewish side of my family and I say what I want in public and people can deal with me. And then if you think about like Italians, white people that are Italian, white people that are Greek, white people that are Jews, like that's, they're louder cultures than
yeah.
white Protestants, right? Like waspy Anglo-Saxon, whatever.
Yeah.
Well, as I get older and on my own healing trajectory, I find that I'm like, it's really odd. I'm finding myself just like hushed a lot. Like I'm in places and I'm just want to keep it down.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really want to, I'm just like, I don't need to, I'm just going to, it's just between you and me. I don't need to broadcast this. I don't need those people in my business. I don't want to bother them with it. Like I've just got this weird new politeness thing going on that feels true to me, right? Just me.
Yeah.
Okay. So, God, there's a lot I could say already. Anyway, so I said to Rami, I'm having a million thoughts at once here, but I said to Rami, like, what is your perspective on, because I don't see this as much with black men. I see it more with black women where there's a, I told Rami my theory about where it's coming from. And I said, how does this land for you? So I'm going to tell you my theory. Then I'll tell you what Rami said. And then I'd love to hear your thoughts and discuss it a little. I was like, my sense of it is, or like my guess would be, if you're the non-hegemonic group in a world, you live in a world, there's a hegemonic culture that is white people. Like they are, I guess they call themselves the majority. And you have a history of slavery in your history of people that are not white. And you're one of those people. And slavery is not happening now. Part of what you might be about is, I'm going to be as loud as I fucking want because you're going to deal with me. I will not be silenced by this waspy, polite, white, hegemonic group who says it's the dominant culture and is in control of everything else.
Yeah.
Like the white capitalist patriarchy is, it does remain present day. So I imagine if you come from, if that's in your lineage, that you're going to be a little bit of a deal with me because fuck you. Is that kind of what it's about? Or is there something, what else am I missing here? I'd love to understand it better because I'm curious about my own, as I develop, I'm like, I'm just like gentle and quiet and I would like a quiet restaurant where people are polite. And I'm like, God, I'm moving to Walnut Creek, yeah. Lovely home.
You're becoming your mother.
I'm becoming like an upper class white lady and I'm worried about it. Like I'm like a rich white lady. Like it's like,
Yeah.
So as I sit with that, right, it's like, I know that I'm not only that, but that is, I'm making a lot of choices that line up with what those people do. Okay. So Rami said also, they were like, I will not be silenced is a part of it. But they also said, and Rami, if you're listening to this and want to chime in because I miss any points, please do. But there's like in black culture, there's a lot of comfort with communalness.
Yeah.
You're in my business. I'm in your business. We're talking to each other. We're communicating loudly. It's communication. It's together. You're in the business. It's not this sort of like separate, everybody's handling their own track politely going forward. It's just a different, it's just like cultural distinction. Number one is that.
Right.
And then two, they were talking about black kids and like Latina and Latino kids come up with music and like movement more naturally integrated. Like kids show up like they've been being sung to and danced with in the womb. And they come right. out.
It's been going on around them much more actively. And
yeah. So there's like noise and dancing and singing and sound and communal raising. Like they even use the example of like any Black person that would see a Black kid in public acting up, not I shouldn't say any, but like more often you would see this in Black culture that a Black woman would like scold or coach or
a kid they didn't know. Cause
right. Whereas in white culture, you would be like, not my kid, not my problem, not going to get in that lady's business. Totally inappropriate. And then Rami was using the example of, and then I'll wrap up because I know you want to say words, but like doing plays as an actor. And Rami has done so many plays in white spaces and then so many plays in Black spaces and dance, particularly lots of dance in Black audiences, spaces. And Rami will find themselves saying to their Black cohorts in a production, like their friends will come and be like, these people hate this play. They hate it or they hate this show. And Rami's like, no. They're just, they love it. I can tell. They're going to watch at the end. They're going to clap real loud.
The, quote, correct time.
When it's the correct time, they're going to clap real loud. And after the play, they'll come up to you and be like, wow, that was amazing. Whereas, and the Black people's response will be like, that's so weird. Why are they like that?
It's in the moment. Be there. Yeah.
Well, no, but, and then the white people shows Rami's like, hears from the white actors, why were these people talking in the middle of the play? They were like responding to me. They were speaking to me, the actor. No, we don't do that. And Rami's like standing in the middle, like, yeah, see, so white people, the idea that white people have about what's appropriate behavior in a theater is the opposite of what Black folks are thinking is appropriate in a theater.
Right.
Because of these differences we're talking about.
Right. Because of the way that culturally you express within even shared experiences.
Well,
you know, if you see something you like, you right away, yes, call it out.
Yeah.
Shout it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I've experienced a little bit of that only just by proxy, but that's a standard sort of common trope idea. And in fact, there's a lot in theater now where like program inserts or even pre-show speeches that are really encouraging people to say, please allow those around you to appreciate this in any way they see fit. So you don't have like a Black lady going, yes, and then people turning around and looking at her like,
right,
like, why are you doing that? You know, like, you can't do that. That's inappropriate. So I've read it. I've seen it in a lot of like program inserts and stuff like that, where they're really trying to get this idea of how do we sit in this space and how do we share this space? Well, one way is to allow for a breadth of expression,
right,
of appreciation. And it's not going to look the same for you as it is for this other person.
Exactly.
And unless they're actually, you know, someone's like truly interfering with the play, which is a whole other angle of behavior. But that's just drunk people. That's not
exactly
cultural.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we've all dealt with that as well. But there is. And I've definitely experienced that adjustment energy of like, oh, they're being that way.
Sure.
I hear noise and I'm not used to hearing noise in this moment.
Totally.
And then sort of adjusting your own, like, well, what is that noise? Oh, that's just noise of engagement. That's not noise of disruption. That's noise of engagement.
Yep. Anyway, so coming back to the point, which is that like, just, it was fun to be in this bathroom stall going like, I noticed that I am preferring more of this white lady shit as I get older.
Mm-hmm.
And simultaneously, I have more room for non-white lady stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, I feel like I just found it very neutrally interesting. I was like, oh,
right.
Gosh.
Rather than being irritated or offended. Yeah, or anything.
I was just like, this lady lives in a different dimension. Let's talk about these dimensions.
Well, I might blow that idea of culture and comfort within culture even wider. Like you brought it up a little bit, like, oh, Jewish people are louder or Italian people are louder. And I don't know for sure, but I'm going to theorize that those things also occur within that community space more. So like,
what do you mean?
Italians,
yeah,
you know, hanging out their window in a particular neighborhood in Queens are going to be more that than they are when they're at the Met, right? Because,
oh, I see. Uh-huh.
You know, or talking to each other, even if they're at the Met, than they are talking to the other person that they don't know. So like within community, that energy gets amplified. I mean, sometimes that community is just on the phone, maybe. And that's where I think it gets strange. I don't think you would have responded that way had you been at a cafe and there had been two people talking loudly and expressively, maybe a little intimate about it. Maybe you probably would about the intimate stuff. But it is a little weird when someone's on the phone because they seem to be alone when they're doing it.
And what's weird when they're loud?
Yeah, if someone's loud and expressive and you might, weird is the wrong word. You note it when someone's doing it on the phone in a bathroom stall because that's so out of place.
Right.
But in fact, they're not doing it in a vacuum. They are doing it sort of in community.
Right.
On the phone. Yeah.
Right. Right. But even like the thing of, okay, here's another thing. We were in Seattle and last week and Eric and I, and we were out to dinner and there were two, young, okay. Give me a second. It was a young woman with her partner who was, a trans man who, I want to get the pronouns right. I think I'm going to get the pronouns wrong. But anyway, they were dynamic young people who were not just like straight, white,
cis-het.
Gender, cis. Yeah, my brain is not saying words right now. Anyway, they were young, dynamic people with different ways that are not the hegemonic way of gender and sexuality. Sorry, but I can't get words out of my mouth. Anyway, the woman, her dad was at the table. They were all white.
Mm-hmm.
All these three people were white. Dad was probably 58-ish years old.
So old.
Grandpa. And these kids were, I know, I'm just teasing. These kids were like probably late 20s would be my guess. And they were talking about kink culture and the BDSM dungeon they go together and separately, and which 6-inch platform heels he wears or she wears or they wear. And I'm talking about at a volume where many times people across the restaurant would turn and look. They were right next to us. So we heard every single detail of their lives.
Yeah.
So I was so impressed. I was very impressed with the dad being like, oh yeah, cool. And did you wear the leather strap or did you not wear it? Like just nonplussed, chilling all about it, super supportive. And the dad was dressed like my guess would be he was like a painting contractor. Like he was dressed with like paint covered jeans and like a baseball cap and a.
Oh, you don't know that subgenre of queer culture, paint boy?
I should. No. And so anyway, it was just very cool to see this white middle-aged man who did not look like some kind of Seattle hipster. He looked like a dad, a white guy, you know, truck
suburb dad.
Suburb dad. Yeah. And he was super down. And these people, I mean, we were just trying to eat dinner, but we were in their lives.
Yeah.
They were white. They were white. And there was something. Now that experience had the feeling of, and I'm exploring my reaction to this while I say it. It felt entitled and kind of like clueless, like unconscious. Felt like this is just how I talk,
right?
And I'm talking very loud, and I'm not even aware that I'm like dominating the conversation four tables over,
right?
Because I just want to talk like this right now.
Yeah, what's the difference?
Correct.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, the difference is my own white people racism, where I go, these white kids, these Gen Z white kids are so entitled.
Right.
They don't even give a fuck about who's around them.
Yeah.
But I'm giving the black lady in the bathroom total license and like non-judgment space.
Well, I would apply the same rubric, in fact, more. The more hegemonic they are, the more I'm going to come down on that. I'm thinking of like the entitled white guy taking up all the air in the room, talking at full volume, running the conversation, mansplaining to everybody. I can see this frat boy in my head. And I don't want to give him any of that space.
Okay, but what do we think of these Gen Z kids being loud and hipstery and
I'm gonna give them 20% more than I'm gonna give this white. I mean, I'm just sort of talking about my internal reaction.
I see.
Like, yeah, I think there is this sort of spectrum also of power, where the more power we may think someone has, the less we're willing, at least I am willing, to give them license to take up air.
That or to take up arguably air that is theoretically shared and should maybe then be considered a little.
It's the impact of like, it's, I don't want the black lady to have to go, to have to worry about what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
But I definitely want the white guy to think it, to worry about it.
And I wanted these Gen Z white people to.
And the white kids. But they're also queer, so they're in this other space of oppression and
of otherness
and power and otherness. So like, but then there's also this sort of energy of like, they're actually in their empowered place. So they actually could maybe take one breath and look around and go, maybe not full volume.
Yeah.
It's that assumption. And this, I think, can cross all boundaries. It's that assumption that everybody should be fine with everything I do and say.
Yeah, that thing. No.
Yeah.
But no, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. So when I think about it in terms of like, if we're having just a race conversation, like if we're talking about black people and white people, and we're looking at this thing, I think because I grew up around so many black folks and Cuban folks and Jewish folks and Greek folks, and I'm just used to this happening. This is just, that's what black women do.
Yeah.
Like that's what I've always seen forever. And so I just go like, cool, that's what they do. I'm over here doing this thing.
Yeah.
But I was talking with Rami about like the way that, then when Rami said back to me, like, well, you know, music and culture and communalness and there were, it's a different world. And I was like, I know all that shit. And yet I forgot it or something. Like I'm so steeped in my own. This is my whole point back from when I started talking today is like our lens that we're looking through. When you get, I almost think like, it's like when I get busy living life, this like my little life, I'm like living through my lens. And then I, when something is super outside the lens, I have to go, wait, what is that? Why is that happening? Then when Rami said it back, I was like, I already knew all that. Why did I like not remember?
Yeah.
And it's cause like, I think there's only so much bandwidth in a day your mind can, you know, have.
Yeah.
And it made me think like, if you add to the mix of, I'm just in my filter because I have a lot of things to do. So like, I've got to focus and just do them. So my filter is operating sort of in the background. If you add hate of others to that.
Yeah.
I see how you get to where we are in the world we're in. In other words, I think that the hate piece is really like, I mean, obviously the problem, but also we have this problem of the average Joe, I don't think is walking around questioning his lens.
Right.
That he's got a filter through which he's looking.
Right. Well, and if you, everything that somebody does is going to add on to what you've already decided is true. Right. So if you started with your lens of like, ugh, black ladies.
Right.
Then a louder black woman. See, she's loud. She doesn't care.
Yeah.
You just added to that person's list as opposed to, I really don't want to be walking around going, ugh, black lady. So I'm not.
Yeah.
In fact, I'm actively doing the opposite.
Yeah.
Kind of going like, see, open, expand. So then instead the opposite happens where I am walking around with a little bit of ugh, obnoxious white guy. And that's some self-loathing because I watch it in myself. If I get a little drunk and I start getting loud, sometimes I'll notice it and I'll go, Jesus, don't be that guy.
Well, we've talked about this a lot, that you have a lot of that, like,
yeah,
I don't know what the words you want to put to it, but like you do a fair amount of like, I'm not that guy.
Yeah,
I see the problems of being me.
Don't be that guy.
I'm not going to be it. Yeah.
Well, that's my threeness, trying to just constantly threeness. It's like penis. being constantly trying to, you know,
manage your image?
Manage my image.
Yeah. I think the name of this episode is Threeness.
Threeness.
Yeah.
Threenis.
Yeah.
It's only kind of related, but I just want to bring it up because it was on the radio today. It was a story I was listening to while we were driving between gigs today.
Yeah.
And it was about Black women and autism and how rarely they are diagnosed and how very specifically the face of autism is always white boys.
That's true.
And as a result of that, how much like... And like they've done studies where they literally presented a quote specialist with the same set of behaviors and markers. The white boy is then diagnosed as autistic or on the spectrum, and the white woman, when the Black woman is diagnosed as having behavioral problems.
Wow.
And how, so in sort of on the flip side of that same, like, you know, Black women are like this. Is this idea that then if you're not like that, or if you react to noise, or if you have problems with audio stimulation, or if you,
right,
any of those markers of neurodivergence,
yep,
you are then
othered again.
You have nowhere to, you're othered again within your own culture and very much within the hegemonic culture, but you are,
wow,
you're othered in the wrongest and most dangerous way.
Totally.
You know, it, and the worst version of that, it's not a Black woman, it's a Black man, but was Elijah McClain, who was murdered because he was autistic and couldn't deal with the police, and then they killed him. But sorry to make it that heavy and awful, but it's true.
No, it's no, please, come on.
But this idea, even of this discussion we're having being about like, oh, this is how the culture creates. Then even within that culture, you have a challenge of then if you're counter to that, you are also not perceived.
Yeah, for sure.
Both, again, within your own culture as doing it right, and within the medical or sociological culture, you're not going to get seen or get the support you need. And even when she was this adult woman was diagnosed as an adult and it changed her life, like suddenly. But it's only because she did a whole bunch of reading and research of her own and went out and got her own support.
For sure.
Because even, I think she was a teenager when she was diagnosed, even then, the resources weren't available to her.
Yep, for sure-sies.
So.
Hey, what's up? It's Rami. I am in this beautiful location in the country of Slovenia, a country I never would have thought to go to. And also this location is a location I never would have thought to go to. I'm in this tiny village on the side of a hill overlooking a valley, staying in this stone farmhouse. It's an Airbnb. The hosts are right next door and they are lovely, and it's great to have them close by. And it's just a very remote location, and we have a rental car, and that's how we got here, which I don't rent cars. I just never would have come here, you know, not to mention that I knew nothing about this culture or this geography or the geology of this place. And now I've learned some things about that. And I'm just so grateful to be here. It's wonderful. I'm so grateful to my friends, who let me tag along with them and who created this itinerary so that I could say yes to it. I'm an Enneagram 9, and I'm saying that to say that sometimes as a 9, I can be a bit too easygoing, in that all options can look equally fine. And so I can kind of be paralyzed by choice and then end up just kind of like not doing anything. But yeah, so I love having friends who have a plan that I can say yes to, and that once I say yes to it, then I can like take the momentum and run with it. Like I'm a great person to travel with. I can like, I can make the adventure more adventurous. So it's like, you know, I like to think it's a win-win situation. And this also happened in December. Me and Cassidy tagged along with our friend from circus camp, Sahara Moon, and she is a biologist, who's, we went to Costa Rica, and she's a biologist. She's an amazing person to travel to Costa Rica with. And she'd also been there many times, and she knew all about the flora and fauna, and she spoke Spanish. Like, it was just such a great situation. We were so lucky. We were so lucky. And once again, we went to this place we would have never found on our own. We would have never thought to find on our own. And it was fucking incredible. And we were there with her two kids also. And the fact that we were there made her trip more fun. So everybody won. So like, I'm just, you know, another time in my life, I would have judged myself for not being good at making the plans, the initial plans, you know, not being, you know, the way Katie talks about how generators want to be manifestors and manifestors want to be generators. You know, I certainly have had plenty of that self-judgment as I am a generator. I have had so much judgment about, you know, why can't I be more like a manifestor? So leaning into that knowledge and understanding and releasing the self-judgment and like, honoring my own gifts, my motor, my generator motor, which I now totally recognize that I have, and like seeing that we all have a job, you know, that we can contribute in all of our different ways. So, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, fucking grateful for all of that shit. And while I'm talking about gratitude, you know what I'm also grateful for? Can never say this enough. I am grateful for all the people who came before me who made it so that my life could be so sweet. Those who fought for civil rights and gay rights and union rights, you know? Oh, my parents, my grandparents, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I am so fucking grateful that I can't understand how hard they had it or whatever, how hard they worked, that their work led to me not being able to fully appreciate them. And I also see that with people younger than me. I see that they can't understand what was normal for me and what I have done. And that was my goal. My goal was to create these humans who don't stand for things that I just took, you know, who have a completely different normal, whose normal has significantly moved, you know, from where it was when I was younger. And, you know, my normal significantly moved from when my parents were younger. So I recognize that I helped make them, and I'm grateful for the younger people too, which I think I've said, done another Rami's Rules about. Anyway, feeling grateful. All right, Rami's Rules.
I'm having a tangential thought, but it's, I think, related. If you're a Black person in the South and you are Republican, you know how there's like Black Republicans?
Oh, yeah.
What's going on there? Because you can be a fiscal Republican and not agree with some of the social whatevers, but we don't like really get to parse those things out in our current world, because mm-hmm. when you vote Republican, you're voting against yourself.
Well, that's true for white people too, but we don't see that.
No, I know. I'm just saying, like, extra double dog style, if you're like triple levels of it. Like, and that's where I go with like women that are Republican. Like, are you not noticing that they say you can't have autonomy over your body?
Yeah. Well, I got what I need. So, and I earned it.
Yeah.
So everyone else should be able to, too.
What if you're like a poor, uneducated white woman Republican?
It's a lot of them. I've seen them in the rally.
I know. It's like, but you guys, okay. I mean, I don't know.
Bible and abortion.
Right. That's what it is.
I mean, it's all a lie, so it doesn't matter. That's all a created reality.
What was remember the Heroes of the Fourth Turning to play? I mean, just the idea that, where did I see that? There was something that broke it all down to, maybe it was in that play where they talked about
the one of the characters gets confronted, the matriarch, the Jamie Jones role, gets confronted about, wait, why do we still vote this way? And she's like, she's just like, well, you know, Christianity is the answer.
Yeah.
It's like Jesus said, don't XYZ, the end.
Yeah.
And so what do they call it? It's a one issue vote
or whatever, or a one issue platform. Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. We've talked about this again. I don't think it's necessarily news, but we know that the abortion issue was actually actively created at a certain point because they knew they were losing the South. They were losing the,
jeez.
Yeah. And they said, what do we do? How do we keep? And they just pumped up an issue that they actually didn't care about.
Yeah.
And made it into an issue. And suddenly it became a divisive issue. And it worked. Utterly changed the face of politics.
This makes me think of how Jon Stewart is back.
Okay.
Have you seen this?
I haven't. I mean, I knew he was, but I haven't watched any of it.
I didn't know he was until last night. We stumbled upon an episode and I was like, when Jon Stewart finished doing the show, was his hair this white? Erica was like, no, he's back. And I was like, what?
Yeah, it's like 10 years later.
Yeah, that was my question, is how long has it been?
I don't know. When did he leave? It was a while.
His beard is white and his hair is white. And I was like a little, he like looked worse for wear. Like he didn't look great. Not that like, whatever, who cares? But I was like worried about him. Like he didn't just look older. He looked weathered and a little fucked up. But it's fun seeing, I would love to hear.
So he's reflecting America.
Yeah.
We're weathered and a little more fucked up than we were.
It's true. I'd love to hear an interview with him about his whole trajectory. Because when he left, he was so burned out. He like had to leave. He was done.
Yeah.
But then now he's back and I'm like, oh, wow, this is great. And how did you get to that? Like, what happened? Like, I'd love to hear his story.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think it was great. We were watching him talk about Kamala.
Mm-hmm.
And how he was doing a bunch of bits about like how the Democratic Party was essentially the Joe Biden of people in a party. In other words, the party itself was like, well, there's no hope for us. So we're just sliding down the hill of despair. The only option you have is Joe Biden or Trump, and you'll get an old man who's this kind of terrible and that kind of terrible.
Right.
You know, and then now they're like, da-da-da-da-da-da, young woman who can do stuff, and she's brown, and she's different, and she's powerful.
And they're using adjectives like weird in their press releases, which I love.
Who is?
The Harris campaign literally put out a little one sheet that was like, you know, reasons why it was a reaction to a speech that Trump had given. It was like, here's some problematic things. And then it was just like bullet point. I don't remember what they said, but one of them was literally like, this guy's just really weird and probably shouldn't be president. Like they're going for, and it's smart because they're going for youth and comedy. They're making fun of Trump and he will lose his fucking mind if you make fun of him.
Good call.
Just mock him like he mocks you. Like
totally.
But classier and more clever. But actually not that clever. They're just using like simple, like he's weird, right, you guys?
Right, right. Just baseline colloquial talking about reality.
Yeah. Don't say you don't see it because the dude's weird. You got to admit.
This is really great. It is great. I think I've gotten over my hump from last time when we spoke about this. And I was like, I don't know. I'm cynical. I'm worried. America's not willing to vote for a woman, first of all.
Yeah.
But now I'm feeling like, you know, it's more hopeful than it was before.
Yeah. Might even help the down ticket, too, because you might get more people out to vote who wouldn't have gone anyway.
Yeah.
You know who I like talking to this shit about this is Jonathan Spector, playwright Jonathan Spector, our friend.
Okay.
He's one of those, he listens to all the political podcasts for one, because he's a wonk. He's a policy wonk. And he's comforting to talk to because he seems to get it in a very sort of mainstream liberal way. But like he understands how politics work. And he's like, oh, here's why this is great. And here's why. And it's going to be good because of this.
Okay.
So anyway, that's all. It was just comforting to talk to someone who I think is one of the smartest people I know.
Right.
So it helped, you know.
And you're saying he's both intelligent and educated on the topic and optimistic.
And optimistic right now. Yeah.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
I am having the strongest desire to gossip with you about a specific person we know in common.
Should we just talk after the podcast?
Yeah.
You want to just call me when we're done?
I do.
Or we'll just stop recording?
I do, but I want to talk about this phenomenon here without naming names. It is not okay. Jonathan Spector, by the way, that I'm talking okay. about, but you said his name and it made me think of this person. Let me think about how to approach this.
All right, while you're thinking, can you tell that I'm in a fucking sauna right now? Do I look like a person in a sauna?
Now that you said it, I started looking and I see a little sweat on your neck.
Oh my God, it's intense.
Where are you?
I'm in my studio, but from like 3:30 to 7, it's just it's a hot box.
No.
But I'm just, you know what? Let me live in it. Let me be in a sauna. People go to steam rooms and saunas.
They sure do. Do you want to move?
Nah, it doesn't work. I'd have to undo my whole thing. It's fine. I'm kind of enjoying it.
Wow. Now that you said it, I'm like, is he dying in front of me?
Keep talking.
Lord. You just pass out and die?
Yeah. And I can't turn my fan on because it'd be too loud on the mic.
Oh, son of a bitch. I wouldn't be able to do it. I give you a lot of credit.
Yeah, I care.
I care.
What?
Oh my God. So, okay, wait, what was I going to say? Oh yeah. Okay. So
talking about the gossip,
I'll put it this way. There's a human.
A lot of them.
That we both have encountered who I have always felt a feeling of what's all the hype about? People are like, this human, let's call this human Pat.
Great.
Gender neutral, Pat. So people will say, and I'm going to use they, them pronouns because that'll neutralize things. Great. You go to a party, there's Pat. Everybody's like, Pat's here. I'm like, yeah, Pat's here. Mm-hmm. And then I interact with Pat. And my experience of Pat is there's no one in the building. There's no one in there. This is a person performing personhood. There's like no one in there.
Okay.
There's like a tap dance of what a person might be.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of alcohol consumption and that's all there is. And every time I'm interacting with Pat, I feel in my body, like, I don't know who this person is. And I definitely can't connect with them. Like there's no connection I can find.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not funny and they're not insightful and they're not interesting, but everyone in this room thinks they are.
Yep.
Okay.
I have no idea who you're talking about, but I very much understand the phenomenon.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's what's relevant. It's not the person. But so today I was talking with a friend of mine. Well, it was Kat Zidane, because I'm not going to name this person. So Kat and I were talking and this person, Pat's name came up. And Kat offered without my saying anything, because I got used to, you just don't say the truth about this person that you feel, Katie, because everybody just goes, what are you talking about? Pat's great. We love Pat. Pat's in that show. Did you see Pat in the show? Pat's so good in the show. And I'm like, I saw the show. Pat was not good, according to what I think is good. Like, I've just always been like, I just give up on trying to say words about Pat to anyone because I'm alone on an island.
Yeah.
Okay. Kat Zidane says to me like, oh man, I don't know what it is, but I've never felt comfortable around Pat. I don't feel safe around Pat. I don't even know if Pat's in there. Is there a person in there? And I lost my mind. I was like, thank you for being the only human I've ever interacted with who would say this to me.
Wow.
And who gets it. And then we went back and forth about like, yeah, and what about this thing? And this thing feels scary. And this thing feels unstable. And why is everybody friends with Pat? Anyway, it was a very bonding experience for us and it felt good to be validated. But I also am like very interested in that particular phenomenon of how some people sort of, here's how I would frame it, get away with being a borderline personality disorder person or narcissist or a little bit of both. It's hard to say. They get away with it, but not in the normal ways people get away with that. Like, here's what I mean. Normal ways you get away with that is if you're super hot, you're like very physically attractive to everyone, super talented, and everybody wants to balloons and everybody wants what you have and wants to be around you, or super powerful, like they have all the money or they're in charge or they're the boss or they hire you.
Yeah.
This person is none of those things.
God, I can't wait for you to tell me who it is, but don't even type it in the chat. Let's just.
Can't I?
Here, go ahead. It's fine.
Because maybe you'll have this will be interesting. I won't say the person's name Oh, I can't wait to tell you. By the way, this is stays between, you can never, this is not, we're not talking about this to other people.
Yeah, it's fine.
This is, okay.
Huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a very different, I don't have that perspective on that person.
See?
Yeah.
What? Tell me.
And I'll say more offline because it's more personal.
No, no, sure. But like, I genuinely would love to hear adjectives you would use to describe that person so that I can.
Yeah. Friendly, generous, all those things. To me, they are.
I love it.
And it may be a case by case thing. I definitely understand this thing where I've seen it because I think people maybe are weirdly like selective with who they
open up to,
shine their light on or open their, or and or open. Because this person actually I don't see as being like universally admired. I just think they're one of the people, just like in the community.
That's fair.
People like this person, but.
That's fair.
And so I think I was surprised only because like I can name some people that I would have not been surprised had it been.
Sure.
Even if I wouldn't have agreed with.
Totally.
You know.
Because again, remember, I'm not talking about a shiny center of attention narcissist.
No.
I'm talking about a particular.
Talking about someone who people like.
I'm just talking about a person who you don't feel comfortable around. I can't ever find them in there. I'm like, are you hi. Hi. Oh, hey. Oh, they're human? Nope. Ting, ting. It just pings off of a nothing.
Yeah.
But then everyone around me is like, yeah, we're going to Pat's house and we're chilling. And I'm there at Pat's house like, why is this fun? This isn't fun.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know because it's hard to even respond to that because I don't recognize that in that person.
Yeah.
And I definitely, I could probably name other people who have that same thing, but I can't quite, not in the moment,
But so here's my question, though, because I don't need you to collude with me about it. It's more like it was helpful for me to have that talk with Kat because I felt heard and seen and understood. But I don't need everybody to agree with it or something. I just wanted to talk about the phenomenon of something like that. Like, have you ever had a person where you're like, it's not even that I would say I don't like Pat. It's more that I would say
you don't get it.
I can't find them. I don't get it. I don't enjoy it. It's not. Good. It's what's that? I don't.
Do you think there might be some like gates and channels situation with you?
No, I have a different theory.
Okay.
But it could be. It could be that.
Like with you and with Kat and with like three other people, but not with all these other people.
100%. Yeah. You could. You're right. It could totally be that. I don't think so in this case, but you're right. It could totally be that.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. The mechanics are just off.
Yeah.
Simplest way to put it. The human design mechanics just aren't a fit. That could be as simple. But what I'm asking you is, do you have anyone in your life where you're like, I can't with this person, but everybody else is like, that person. You ever have that? I'm trying to think if I've ever heard you have that.
I've definitely had that with actors, but I don't know if it was like jealousy or not, but where I've been like, huh, people just think that person's the shit.
Yeah.
And I can't honestly think of a specific example right now, but like I have definitely experienced that where I was like, okay, I guess I'm just wrong because nothing that person says is of interest to me.
Yeah.
On stage, they are a cipher.
Right.
I don't fall in love with them in any way.
Right.
But it's usually, is it usually a guy who would be sort of my competition? I think it's generally, unfortunately, so it's sullied by that because it's often like, really? That's who they're going to go with again?
I get that. Yeah. That's kind of a different thing, though.
Yeah. Because then it's tainted by envy and jealousy. But there are definitely people who I feel that way about who I'm like, oh, no, they're fucking amazing. Of course. I guess. Yep. Shit.
Sure.
Where there are some people who I just go, what's the appeal?
That.
Why does that continue being
that?
You're the hot shit. Why is that person your hotness?
Or why does it, I think I have less of the hot shit. I'm talking about the phenomenon of any kind of shit. Like, why are we even looking over there? That is not interesting. There's nothing happening there.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just such an interesting phenomenon to me that like, yeah, I mean.
Well, I will then say, just in response to what you're saying, it is an even more interesting phenomenon because I don't think that you know me and you trust me and you know that I have a lens. So now there's a little more weight behind like, oh, that's how you see them?
Yeah.
Which is different than like, The Great Unwashed and you talk about them and you go, why does everyone like this person?
Oh, and yeah.
then you and one other person like, right. Why does everyone like this person?
Right.
And I can look you in the eye and say, oh no, I genuinely like this person.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
And
what's your point about that though?
My point being just that I think it's more complex even than we originally stated. It's not like there are people who are vacuous that everyone falls for.
Right.
You know, that's not what you're describing. You're describing a situation in which you don't get why other people get anything out of this person because you totally don't.
Like personally, not, I'm not talking about as a performer, although
yeah, you're
that too.
Right. But you're just talking personally.
Right.
Yeah. And you just like, what's the,
okay, let me come out and let me be clearer than I'm being. I think there's undiagnosed alcoholism and possibly BPD. And I think you see,
oh,
I think you're given people, different people are given different shades of this person's self based on whatever they think they can give you or not. And I think people with the kind of history with alcoholic family members have DAR for that. In other words, Kat and I both have like alcoholic.
Oh, a DAR. Right. Yeah.
Alcoholic family members. I won't out her whole life story, but like we relate a lot on the Al-Anon level.
You have Al-Anon a DAR.
Yeah. It's like somebody has a particular kind of ism and it's just pings me very clearly. And yeah. So I just think that like there's no harm being caused.
Right.
Pat is not out there killing babies.
Right.
By any means. Right.
Yeah.
Anyhoozle, I think my theory is in this case that I'm picking up on alcoholism and a personality disorder that gets in the arts community. The same qualities get associated with positive traits, charming, outgoing, generous, friendly.
Right.
You know, that's also how you see serial killers. Like, what's his name? Ted Bundy. Like, he's the most charming man you've ever met. And then he would slit your throat. Anyway, I'm not really going anywhere with this, except that was thank you for going there with me. Because it was good to,
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be thinking about it, but yeah, I'm going to not allow it to, like, infect my experience with this person.
No.
You don't want
unless you start to see things.
Oh, shit. Well, damn you.
Truth.
Planted sprouts in my brain.
What was the other thing? What were you going to tell me offline that I now can't remember? Someone who you thought was there?
I could just tell you who.
Oh, yeah.
People that I thought, I was like, I wonder if you're thinking about this person or this person.
Will you type it?
I'll tell you who came to mind. And it would have been like, oh, I'm so sad to think that it's this person, but I could imagine it being this person.
Okay.
But also I was thinking of shinier.
Yeah.
Shinier lights in our community.
Oh, huh. No.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. No.
Or.
Oh, that's a whole different story.
Yeah, we have that. All right. Now we're just talking shit about people without saying it out loud. So it's probably a good place to wrap it up.
Wait. Real quick, were you also not going to say and feel sad about it?
Oh, no, that's a whole other complicated story.
Okay, that's on the list.
But there's a lot there, too.
Yeah, I could go on and on about that one.
What you're describing is a completely different set of problems.
Oh, I know.
And you know that, and I know that, so I would have been surprised if you were applying that to this person.
I understand. Here's a way to make this relevant to the listener.
Great.
I have it. Ugh. I had a friend, my friend Chris McCarthy, who recently motherfucking died, and I'm still fucking pissed off about it. I'm like literally mad at him as a person, individually, for dying.
Yeah.
I've never felt that before.
Mm.
I'm like, you son of a bitch. What? Don't be a dick. Like, Chris is someone who I had that kind of relationship with where you could just say any fucking thing at all to Chris. He's one of my closest friends. We dated a million years ago. And I'd be like, you're being an idiot right now. You're gonna be an idiot. And then he would just laugh and be like, yeah, I am being an idiot. Like, he could take anything.
Yeah.
And he was also the most, oh God, I could go on and on about the gifts of Chris. The point is, one time he said, we both shared the 12-step recovery context and we're talking about gossip. As in 12-step, we call it a character defect. It's like real bad, right? And Christians talk about it that way. And like, nobody's ever supposed to gossip. And Chris was like,
it's never good.
I think it has nuance. And here's how. Chris was saying, he was like, I tend to do gossip because I learn how everyone else is holding a situation and it opens my eyes more times than not. In other words, if I could stand in a group of people and not say the thing I'm thinking, or I could say the thing I'm thinking and then see how people respond and learn, oh, I think I'm being judgmental here.
Right.
Or wait, I think everybody's missing something important that I can add here. Like there's actually something you learn about A, your own perspective, B, if you're willing to hold it, like maybe I'm not seeing this clearly.
Yeah.
You know, like, which goes back to our conversation about that I started this talk with about.
Yeah.
If you're someone who's willing to walk, you are literally melting in front of me.
I'm dying. My fingers are literally wrinkled.
You are disgusting.
Like I'm in a bathtub.
In a soup or a pool. I'm going to liberate you from your suffering right now. But that's.
Finish it.
That's just the last thought I wanted to offer is that there is a kind of way that if you're gossiping with the intention of, I want to understand how other people are holding this so that I can look at how I'm holding it and examine it.
Yeah.
I think that's a nuanced level of where gossip becomes not a character defect.
Well, then it's not really gossip in that sense. I mean, it is because it's still operating usually within the context of just like, what do you guys think about this? Or did you hear about this? But, you know, if you can present it more like you do, like I have this perception of this person.
Right.
And it's been, other people have it too, oddly, I have found. What's the deal?
Yeah.
What about you? And you ran it past someone, and now there's a little more nuance, and there will be more if we get to talk more detailed offline about this.
Yeah.
But I am still a little surprised.
Well, I'll say this much. I think that because there's no way that you are a threat to this person, I mean, maybe in terms of competing for jobs or anything, maybe there.
Yeah.
But like as a person, there's more I can't say now, but you're not, I don't know, for whatever reason, you don't pose any kind of threat to this person, to Pat. So you get the best sides potentially. And because I'm going on a limb, you were raised with not alcoholics and with not people with severe personality disorders, I think sometimes bounce off of you more easily. It just skims right by you because you're like, I just take them as they come.
Yeah.
Because living in your nervous system is not like danger, danger, BPD is in the room.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, that's that guy being that guy, or that's that lady being that lady, or that's that person being that person.
Yeah.
Does that land?
I mean, yes, but because it's describing sort of a blind spot, it's a blind spot. So it only lands in the sense of my head.
Right.
But it doesn't.
I get you.
I don't recognize that as being true in this case.
I hear you.
I take it as a thought for sure. I don't.
Fair enough.
Don't argue with it, but it doesn't.
In this case.
Yeah, that's the problem with blind spots is that's literally what it is. So I can't.
Right. Totally. Totally. It's a weird feeling to regularly be the person who's like, I can sit in this room and be like, I know exactly which personality disorder everyone has.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird because most people aren't attuned to it. So I'm kind of alone.
Yeah.
Experiencing it. And then I guess the end of the thing, and we'll wrap up with this, is holding people in a loving, non-judgmental way, but then keeping your boundaries firm with whoever you want to keep them with. That's the jam.
Exactly. Exactly. So like, oh, well, this person's not for me.
Right.
So I will be perfectly fine, but I will not become emotionally intimate with this person.
Right. 1,000,000%.
I definitely have those. I'm working on that one.
Yeah, I hear you.
I'm working on becoming more emotionally intimate with people because I kind of hold everybody at a certain length out of this same kind of, I don't know. Yeah. But.
All right. Well, good talk.
Good talk, baby. I am absolutely dread. You can actually see it coming through my shirt now.
I mean, I'm like worried about you. Please go inside.
Yeah, I'm going to go drink even more water. And actually, I'm going to go outside because that's where the cool air is.
If we ever tape another episode of this show, you'll know Cassidy survived this day. But he may not, so send prayers.
This may be the last you hear.
You are soaking wet now. It got so much worse.
Yeah, it's hilarious.
Okay, go. Goodbye. I love you. Do your work.
Okay, bye. Do your work.
What are you asking for? All of the answers. Say what? All of the answers. Yeah, all the answers.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @AllAnswersPod, @AllAnswersPod. Thank you.
What? Should we be talking about this?
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
I really don't think we're supposed to be talking about this.